All right, so we got a mountain of text processing stuff here. Looks like some serious exam prep, huh? But hey, good news, it's the foundation of all NLP. So once we nail this, you're golden. Plus, your material is fascinating.
Yeah, it's all about that bridge between human language and what computers can actually grasp.
Right, like teaching a computer to read.
Yeah.
But way more complex than just that.
Oh, absolutely. The whole what's a word question gets tricky fast. Like you got New York, that's one unit, right? Or think about, super common in speech, but not your typical word. The brown corpus really shows how messy it gets.
Definitely not all neat spaces between words. So how does a computer even begin to figure that out?
We got two main paths. Rule-based and statistical rule-based is like your grammar rules, clear-cut. For languages that play nice, structure-wise, it's solid.
Makes sense, but what about languages that are more, I don't know, free-flowing or have crazy complex word structures?
That's where stats come in. They learn from the data itself, no fixed rules. Byte pair encoding, BPE for short, is a big one. Imagine starting with single characters, then you merge the most frequent pairs until you build up words.
Kind of like those file compression things, finding patterns to save space. But here, it's finding the most common chunks of words, right? Does that help with words the computer's never seen before?
Bingo. Huge for out of vocabulary words. Definitely exam worthy. Let's say your model hits a brand new word, BPE, breaks it down into smaller bits. IT does know, giving it a fighting chance. Essential for stuff like machine translation, where new words pop up all the time.
So it's not just chopping at the text, it's making the model way more adaptable. That's got to be key for those massive language models everyone's talking about, right? The transformers. They live and breathe on subword stuff.
You got it. Those huge models trained on mountains of data. They need BPE and its buddies to keep things manageable, while still capturing all the little nuances of language. But beyond the techie bits, there's this key difference: word types versus tokens. Remember that sentence? They picnicked by the pool, then lay back on the grass and looked at the stars, and they're.
Yeah, 14 types, 16 tokens.
Ah!
I tripped on that one at first. Why is it such a big deal for NLP?
Think of it this way. Types tell us how rich the vocabulary is, how many different words are there. Tokens show us the actual USE, how often they pop up. Hugely important for things like, figuring out word frequency. That feeds into everything from keywords to figuring out who wrote something. You'll see this on the exam, guaranteed, so pay close attention to how they use it.
Good point. It's not just knowing the words, it's knowing how they fit into the bigger picture. Okay, so we've got tokenization down. What about Herndon's Law or Heap's Law? It seems tied to this whole vocabulary growth thing.
It is. It basically says the more text you have, the more unique words you find, but it slows down over time.
Like exploring a new city. More you walk around, more landmarks you see. But eventually you're going to start recognizing some stuff, right?
Exactly. Practically speaking, this matters for NLP, especially when you don't have infinite computing power. Building huge vocabularies gets expensive, memory-wise. Processing power, too, Herndon's Law helps us be smart about how big our vocabulary needs to be without tanking the model's performance.
Really useful stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so text is chopped up. We've got our tokens. What's next on this NLP to-do list?
Time to tidy up text normalization. That's like, I don't know, organizing your messy room makes everything easier to find, right?
Oh, tell me about it.
Yeah.
But in NLP terms, what's that look like?
Case folding is a big one. Everything goes lowercase, helps find patterns, compare things easily. But there's a catch. Sometimes case matters, like sentiment analysis love, all caps. Way different vibe than lowercase love.
True. So case folding is a tool, not a rule. What else we got?
Lemmatization and stemming, both about getting words down to their simplest form. Lemmatization uses the dictionary form, the lemma, like am, is, are, they all become be.
Sounds precise, lemmatization. But probably needs a ton of linguistic knowledge behind it. Is stemming like the faster rough and tumble version?
Yep, stemming is usually faster. It's like chopping off endings based on rules. The Porter Stemmer is a classic.
Efficient, but could get messy. I see some potential for mishaps there.
Yeah.
What could go wrong with stemming?
You can overstem. Chopping too much off policy becomes pollock, kind of weird. Or understemming, related words don't get linked up. European should maybe become Europe, but maybe not. These mess ups can throw off all the NRP stuff later on.
So choosing between them is all about what you're trying to do here, and how much accuracy matters versus speed. Anything else we should know about normalization for the exam?
There's more, but these are your bread and butter. Remember, it's all about consistency. Makes the analysis smoother, specific techniques. Depends on the task, the language, all that jazz.
Makes sense. Right tool for the right job. Okay, we've tokenized, we've normalized. Now, how do we teach a computer something as basic as the end of a sentence?
Good question, and it's trickier than it sounds. It's called sentence segmentation. Punctuation's the big clue, especially periods. B-U-T, periods are sneaky.
Ah, I see it now. They end sentences, but they're also in abbreviations like Mr. or Inc. That's got to be a headache for a computer, right?
No, big time. Think about this. The company, Inc., is successful. Which periods are sentence enders? Which ones are just part of the abbreviation? Figuring that out is key for getting sentence segmentation, right?
So how do we solve this period mystery? Any tricks up our sleeve?
Few approaches, rule-based, might use dictionaries, lists of common abbreviations. Machine learning can be trained to predict the boundaries, looking at the words around the period, all that.
That goes detective shows, piecing together clues.
Exactly. Sentence segmentation seems simple, but it shows how hard it is to get computers to understand the nuances of human language.
Speaking of tough stuff, I remember struggling with minimum edit distance. It sounds easy, like how many changes to turn one word into another, but the math got real intense real fast.
Yeah, it's one of those deceptively simple things. Elegant on the surface, but there's some serious algorithms chugging away underneath. Let's break it down. You misspell a word. How does spell check know what you meant? Edit distance, specifically Levenshtein distance.
Levenshtein distance. Okay, I've heard that one. It's all about insertions, deletions, substitutions, right? Like building blocks of word transformation.
Precisely. How many of those do you need to turn word A into word B? That's the distance intention to execution. 5 edits, 2 insertions, 2 deletions, and a substitution.
So each edit is like a point, and you want the lowest score possible. But how do computers actually do that? It seems like there could be a million ways to get from one word to the other.
Dynamic programming to the rescue. It's this trick where you break a big problem into smaller, overlapping ones. Like building a bridge, brick by brick.
Dynamic programming, yeah. Textbook flashback.
Yeah.
But how does it work for this specifically? Still fuzzy on that part.
Picture a grid. Each cell is the edit distance between a chunk of the first word and a chunk of the second. Start top left, empty chunks, work your way to bottom right, full words. Each cell's value is based on the ones around it, those insertions, deletions, substitutions we talked about.
So each cell tells you the smallest number of edits to get to that point from the very beginning, like a step-by-step guide for word transformation.
You got it. And to make it visual, imagine each cell has arrows pointing back to where its value came from. Get to the bottom right, follow the arrows back up. That's your minimum edit distance path.
That's a really neat way to see it. Makes it way less intimidating. So it's like breaking down a marathon into manageable chunks, right?
Exactly. And minimum edit distance isn't just for spell checkers. It's in machine translation, DNA analysis, even speech recognition. Super versatile tool for comparing any kind of sequence, really.
This is super helpful. Okay, so we've done tokenization, normalization, sentence segmentation, and now minimum edit distance. That's a lot of ground cover just in this first part. I'm already feeling way better about that exam, ready to tackle the next phase of the NLP pipeline.
Totally. Now we've got this text all nice and prepped, right? Time for the fun part, actually getting meaning out of it. And that usually means classification.
Ah, classification. Now things get juicy. Taking all those nicely organized words and figuring out what they're actually saying. And I know logistic regression is like the workhorse for that, right?
You know it. It's everywhere in machine learning. Super important for NLP stuff like, is this review positive or negative? Is this email spam? What topic is this article about? It's all about predicting a category from a bunch of features.
So like if I'm trying to see if someone loved or hated a movie, logistic regression could tell me.
Exactly. The review is what goes in. The sentiment, good or bad, is what we want to predict. And the features are like the clues in the text that hint at the sentiment.
Okay, so what kind of clues would we look for in a movie review? What screams positive or negative to the algorithm?
We could look at how often certain words pop up. Like if it's all amazing, brilliant, captivating, chances are it's a good review. But if it's terrible, disappointing, boring, well, you get the idea.
That's pretty straightforward. But isn't that a bit too simple? Just counting good and bad words. What about stuff like sarcasm or when people use not bad to mean good?
Good point. We got to go beyond just counting and look at more complex stuff. Negation's a big one. Those not and didn't words, throw those in and suddenly not bad flips from negative to positive.
Context is king, as always. What else could we look at to make our sentiment analysis even smarter?
Oh, all sorts of things. How long the review is, how they use punctuation, even emojis can be a clue. It's all about getting creative and finding features that really matter for the specific task.
Like being a text detective, searching for clues, But how do we teach logistic regression to actually do this prediction stuff? Where do these magical feature weights come from?
That's where the machine learning magic comes in. We need a bunch of movie reviews that are already labeled, like this one's positive, this one's negative. That's our training data.
So the model learns from these examples, figures out which features are like strongly positive or strongly negative.
You got it. It keeps adjusting those feature weights until it can predict the sentiment of the training data really well.
Like fine-tuning a recipe, right? Adjusting ingredients until it tastes just right. But how does it know which way to adjust? It needs some guidance.
It does. That's where the loss function comes in. It measures how off the model's predictions are from the true labels. Our goal is to find the weights that make that loss as small as possible. Cross-entropy loss is a common one for logistic regression.
Cross-entropy loss. Okay, that sounds a bit intense. Can we break that down a bit?
Sure. Think of it like this. If the review is actually positive and the model says very likely positive, the loss is low. Good job. But if it's positive, the model's like, it could go either way. The loss is high. Bad model.
So the more confident and correct the model is, the better it's doing. Makes sense. But how does it find those perfect weights? Is it just randomly guessing?
Not quite. We use something called gradient descent. It's a clever little algorithm.
Gradient descent rings a bell. Something to do with slopes and finding the lowest point.
Exactly. Imagine the loss function is like a landscape with hills and valleys. Gradient descent starts somewhere random and keeps taking small steps downhill towards the lowest point, which is the minimum loss.
Like a hiker trying to get to the bottom of the valley.
Precisely. But how does the algorithm know which way is down? Calculus. The gradient of the loss function tells us the steepest way up, so we just go the opposite way.
Calculus and NLP. Who knew? But it makes sense. So gradient descent helps us find those perfect weights. But are there any traps we could fall into while training?
Overfitting's a big one. That's when the model gets really good at predicting the training data, but fails on anything new. It's like memorizing the answers instead of understanding the material.
Overfitting? Yeah, not a good look. How do we stop our model from becoming a training data superstar, but a real-world flop?
Regularization helps. It's like a penalty for having weights that are too complex. Forces the model to focus on the most important features, not get lost in the weeds.
Keep it simple, stupid. I like it.
Right.
But what if we have more than two categories? Can logistic regression handle that? Like, instead of just positive or negative, what if we have very negative, negative, neutral, positive, very positive? Five categories for our movie reviews.
We can handle it. That's where multinomial logistic regression comes in, sometimes called softmax regression. It's like having multiple detectives, each specializing in one category.
Sounds efficient. So how does this multi-detective approach work?
Instead of one set of weights, we have a separate set for each category. Then we use the softmax function to calculate the probability of each category, making sure they all add up to 100%.
Softmax function. Is that related to the sigmoid function?
It is. Softmax is like sigmoid. But for multiple categories, it takes a score for each category and turns them into probabilities.
So it's like a competition. And softmax is the referee, deciding who wins based on those probabilities. But once we have these results, how do we actually interpret them? What do they tell us?
We can look at the weights for each feature, for each category. Positive weights mean the feature pushes towards that category. Negative weights mean it pushes away. And the bigger the weight, the more important that feature is.
Like peeking into each detective's notebook, seeing what clues they found most important. But can we be even more sure that the model's making good decisions? We don't want to just take its word for it, right?
Absolutely. We have statistical tests for that, like the likelihood ratio test or the Wald test. They tell us if a feature is really making a difference or if it's just random noise.
So it's like a jury reviewing the evidence. Okay, we've covered a ton on here. Binary and multinomial logistic regression, loss functions, gradient descent, overfitting, regularization, even statistical tests. It's amazing how much depth there is to this one algorithm.
Right. And this is just one of many machine learning tools in NLP. There's a whole world out there, support vector machines, neural networks. They all have their pros and cons.
Can't wait to dive into those. But before we move on to the grand finale of our text processing journey, are there any other classification concepts we should touch on?
Yeah, I think we've given our listener a solid grasp of text classification with logistic regression.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much goes into analyzing something as simple as a movie review, huh?
It is. And don't forget, this is just one tiny slice of NLP. These techniques apply to tons of things. Machine translation, question answering, you name it.
Right. And it all goes back to those text processing basics we started with. It's like, I don't know, building a house. You need a strong foundation before you even think about walls and a roof.
Exactly. If you mess up the foundation, the tokenization, the normalization, the whole thing can crumble.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a translation system that can't figure out word boundaries, or a sentiment analysis model that freaks out over capitalization.
Yep.
Be a disaster. Yikes. So even a tiny error early on can snowball into a huge EE problem later on. That's something to think about for the exam, how a mistake in, say, tokenization could completely mess up your classification results.
Definitely. It's all connected. Speaking of the exam, let's circle back to minimum edit distance. We talked about it with spell checkers and machine translation, but it's useful for so much more, both in NLP and beyond.
Yeah, you mentioned DNA analysis. That's wild.
Yeah.
But what about other uses in text processing?
Let's say you're building a plagiarism detector. Minimum edit distance could compare two documents and flag any parts that are way too similar. Or think about search engines. They use it to fix typos, suggesting the most likely correct spelling based on what you typed.
Those are great examples. It's not just finding the shortest path between words. It's about understanding similarity in general, right?
Exactly. And that's what makes text processing so cool. It's this bridge between human language, which is messy and full of nuance, and computers, which need clear, logical rules.
To do it well, you got to speak both languages, the human one and the computer one.
I love that. And as you learn more about NLP, you'll see even more sophisticated techniques like neural networks that are pushing the limits of what's possible. But those core text processing concepts you're learning now, those are the foundation for understanding it all.
I'm definitely hooked on NLP. But for now, I think we've given our listener everything they need to ace that exam. We've covered tokenization, normalization, stemming, sentence segmentation, minimum edit distance, even a deep dive into classification with logistic regression.
I agree. They've got the knowledge, the analogies, and the motivation to succeed. And hey, even after the exam, keep exploring NLP. There's always more to learn.
Couldn't have said it better myself. That wraps up another deep dive. Best of luck with that exam, and keep those brains buzzing.